The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The bodybuilding world will never be the same.
Get ready for MD Radio with your host, Sean Ray. We'll take you inside the world of health and fitness with a focus on bodybuilding. Now, here's your host, Sean Ray.
All right, welcome everybody back to another episode of MD Radio. It's your host, Sean Ray, on the line, back from around the world trip, man. I've been putting some serious frequent flyer miles on covering this whole bodybuilding scene. And of course, last Monday was Veterans Day, so a big shout out to all of our armed service men and women who defend this country, the home of the free and the land of the brave. And getting right down to business, we are on the eve of the 32nd annual NPC National Bodybuilding Fitness Bikini Physique Championships taking place this Friday and Saturday in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where it seems a lifetime ago we saw a young man by the name of Lee Haney walk off with the first ever national championship in 1982, only to be succeeded by our first guest. Without any further ado, let me welcome to the radio show for the first time one of my biggest inspirations. He doesn't know this, but I'm very excited to bring him on as a guest. When I started bodybuilding, it just happened to be 1983. I was 17 years old, playing football, and decided I wanted to make a go for it. I joined a gym. One of the first guys I saw looking like a rock star was this young man coming on right now, Mr. Bob Parisart, 1983 NPC National Champion of some 31 years ago. Bob, welcome to MD Radio.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Well, to put things in perspective, I got to tell you, Bob, I've had pretty much everybody and anybody on this radio show over the past 5 or 6 years, and this is one of the interviews I was looking forward to the most, because without you even knowing me coming up as a teenager, you were the guy when people talked about what I thought a bodybuilder should look like, dress like, carry themselves like, that embodied all of those characteristics and made me actually want to be a bodybuilder. I didn't have the opportunity coming up behind you to personally tell you these things, because you kind of, as quickly as I arrived on the scene, you were changing gears and moving in different directions, but you influenced not only myself, but there's a slew of us out there more than you know. So let me get that out of the way and say thank you for being a huge influence on my bodybuilding career.
You're very kind, Sean. That's I really appreciate that. I'm always pleased to hear when the work I was doing and trying to just be true to this ideal that I had about this thing that we all kind of love, and the boulder we struggle against. I'm so happy when the work reaches people in such a positive way. So thank you.
Yeah, it's a really crazy kind of a fraternity, because coming up as a young guy out here in California, I was exposed to all the elements. You were one of the first guys I saw, not only in the magazines, but when I walked into World Gym sometime back in 1986 with John Brown. You happened to be in there, and I looked over and I saw Chris Dickerson and Danny Padilla and Tom Platt. I walked right into the page of Muscle and Fitness.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, you seemed to fit nicely in there. You were already, like, at the top of the heap. Take me back, because that was when I was coming up. What drug you into this sport in the first place? Because you really did come in to a pretty much of a golden era of bodybuilding, and I don't know how you got motivated and influenced to create what you did.
Well, for me, it was an accidental discovery, Sean. It was I was playing football in high school. I lived growing up in southern Indiana, and I was kind of a skinny kid. You know, I was more of a track athlete build than a really sort of a football build. But football was a big deal, and so I discovered this unused universal machine back in the back of the high school basketball gym. And just started playing around with it, and little by little, the stuff just clicked, and I just intuitively kind of understood how this was meant to work. I was an artistic and an athletic kid, so I kind of just immediately, as I saw these sort of changes kind of quickly happen to my body over the course of the summer, especially between my sophomore and junior year of high school, these sort of dramatic changes, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. And right around that time, it was about, well, when would it have been? It would have been 1976, I guess. Arnold was in an article, Annie Leibovitz photographed this article, for Rolling Stone. And there was Arnold and Frank Zane and, you know, all around the making of Pumping Iron. And I just thought this was the coolest thing because, you know, what they were striving for was to kind of perfect the human form, but it still, even though it looked like it was something like so out there, it still looked as if they could be athletes, they could run around the block, they could, you know, bend over and touch their toes and that kind of stuff. And that's what really intrigued me because I had this very mixed sports background of running and cycling and hiking and backpacking and, you know, canoeing and all these kind of very physical activities. And I wanted the weight training to really contribute to that rather than sort of get in its way. And so it kind of just built from there. And, I, you know, lived in the middle of the sticks. So what, you know, how was I going to, there were no gyms where I was. So, it just kind of built a little bit. And, you know, at 19, I kind of ran away from home and ran or was pushed and ended up in California, living out of the back of my car for a while and training at Gold's Gym when I could afford it and, you know, hook by crook, kind of made it and won the Mr. LA in 1981, and that kind of took off from there.
That I was getting to 1981 because that's the Mr. LA was where I kind of tiptoed into the deep end of the pool. I went there to compete in 83 for the teenage division. They didn't have one.
Yeah.
I wound up in the open division in 83, and I wound up getting third, but I'd known that you'd won that, and people that had done well in the L.A. Championships seemed to have gone on and done other things like the California and the Nationals, which, fast-forwarding, it couldn't have gone unnoticed that there were a lot of comparisons between you and Steve Reeves from the old days when you came up. Was there someone you were trying to train to look like or emulate on your way to a national title?
Well, I was really fortunate when I got to California and I was sort of at loose ends and I was in a way this kind of nihilistic kid also who was just trying to come to grips with his place in the world and kind of was a little bit without mooring, I guess you could say. After the first year I was in Southern California and didn't know anyone or, you know, was slowly making friends, I met Roy Liedlmeyer and he kind of, you know, we hit it off. He took me under his wings and started showing me, you know, a path that was possible that I already felt like I was pursuing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we trained, he guided my training, up until, the LA, win. And, I was really grateful for that. I mean, I think you have to really, it's important in life to sort of, you know, to remember your history and to give credit where credit is due. And, that was one of the formative relationships that kind of built that foundation of where I was going to head as an athlete in that sport.
Well, Roy Liedlmeyer helped and influenced many people. Unfortunately, he didn't get to see the other side of the fruit of his labor in terms of a national championship.
Right.
You held him at bay in 1983 and deprived him of that glory. And ironically, Rory would be competing another 10 years trying to get that very elusive title that he actually never did achieve, but was arguably one of the best gifted, genetically built, strong bodybuilders of his time that found a way to help other people achieve that dream.
Absolutely. And you know something, there's something very honorable in that as well. Look, it was very close between he and I. And, you know, after the LA, I started feeling as if I was never a person. I would have a very sort of strong vision and I was never a person to sort of just say, okay, just tell me how to do it. And I won't even think about this at all. As I began to sort of grow in my own perspective on the basis of this apprenticeship, as I entered the sort of the journeyman heading toward mastery, that direction, we sort of, our paths diverged. And then there we were on stage in the 83 Nationals for the first time competing against each other. And it was, you know, kind of teacher and ex-student, and it was a close one. There's no doubt about it. Those were some of the most hard-fought. And you were right earlier when you said it was a golden age. It was a golden age. It was. It was one of the best Nationals, I think. And I don't say that because of my placement. I say that because of the depth of talent. And right. there was an era that just had that overwhelming depth of talent, and you had people who just simply were able to leap through the window as it happened to be open as they were going toward it. And in any other second, if the world had turned an inch, the other person would have leapt through it.
You gained a lot of credibility in that victory. I mean, you had held off Matt Mendenhall, who was second to Lee Haney the previous year in 82, and arguably could have beat Lee Haney. You beat your mentor and one of your trainers in Roy Liedlmeyer, who arguably had the best shape of all bodybuilders during his heyday, and there you were, victorious in 1983. And clearly, at that moment, your life had to have changed and to various degrees that you probably weren't actually aware of at the time. So what happened after you put these guys to rest?
Well, it kind of, everything just hit a whirlwind. And 3 weeks later, I won the world championships. And again, it was a very close competition. Barry DeMay was also coming up, and Ralph Mueller was there. And, there were, again, the depth of field was quite strong. And what happened for me is that, you know, the demand, the thing that you're trying to work toward, and I hadn't really thought through, you know, the notion of work, of being a pro was sort of like this concept out there in the distance. But the way that life really kicked into high gear, and then I was traveling all the time, I'd started developing I was doing seminars, but they were different than a traditional bodybuilding seminar, because I'd been on debate team and gave speeches and did plays all the time when I was in school. So I thought, I'm going to do something different and talk about being a champion of your own life. And so I was touring constantly, trying to prep for an upcoming Mr. Olympia. And that, ironically, was the first year ever that the Mr. Olympia came before the Nationals, or what had been the Mr. America, and before the World Championships. Otherwise, you know, I probably would have jumped into my first Olympia in 83. And so, I don't know, life just kicked into high gear. It was really interesting, Sean. I mean, you had this experience also, I'm sure, that you're suddenly going from this one place, and then here I was 23 years old, and suddenly I'm on national television doing talk shows and going all over the world, and I saw the world. By the time I was 25, I'd been around the world like 3 or 4 times, and which is nuts.
Well, we know the landscape of the sport has changed so rapidly. It did go through a phase where we thought the sport was dying. It came back and reinvented itself. It added fitness, it added figure, it added bikini, and now it's got men's physique. And there's record-breaking numbers. We're going to be headed into the 32nd annual NPC National Championships this weekend, where they're expecting nearly 1,000 competitors overall.
Wow.
Including the bodybuilding portion. And it seems like bodybuilding may be taking a back seat, but what it is I think it's a little bit more inclusive in these other arenas, where the bodybuilding has now become much more elite. Where it was once more of a cult, it's very much more elite, and you've got all these other athletes crossing over. I want to catch your opinions as this evolution process is taking place, and you're sitting on the sidelines. Clearly, a lot of things have gone on in your life where you've moved in many different directions from the stage and your retirement. By the way, what year was the last time you were on a bodybuilding stage, guest building?
I think it was 1991, I'd have to say. I competed in the 91 Olympia, and I'm not sure. It's been, you know, That's a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
I'm not positive. I first retired from bodybuilding shortly after the 1985 Olympia. And I was a guy who had a lot of diverse interests in life. And I threw myself full-time into 2 years of a very intense theater conservatory. And then when I came out of that, when I finished that 2 years, I sort of looked around and kind of just, you know, felt like there was a part of me that felt like I hadn't given it its due. It was a very sort of like odd time in my life. So I jumped back into training and then continued on until 91.
Well, and, hold on a second. I'm going to pick that up. We're going to take our first commercial break here to find out the second salvo or the second coming of Robert Clark Parris. I remember standing next to you some 4 or 5 years later in the 1988 right. Mr. Olympia when it came to Los Angeles, and you talk about dreams come true. That was an honor and a privilege. You're on with Bob Parris as we head into the 32nd annual NPC National Championships. We're going to get his views and perspectives on the sport of bodybuilding when we come back.
This is Lonnie Tieper from Iron Man Magazine, the greatest of all time. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Focus, strength, recovery, results. Introducing Maximize, brought to you by iForce Nutrition. Tired of the same old caffeine buzz? Are you ready to step into a new world of power, energy, and intensity? Maximize has set a new standard in the supplement world, delivering tunnel vision focus, cell swelling volumization, and unstoppable endurance. Don't settle for the current crop of underclothes products. It's time to join the next generation with Maximize, the only pre-workout supplement you need for extreme gains in strength and performance. Don't just train. Maximize your workouts. Visit www.iforcenutrition.com for details.
Over the years, iForce Nutrition has brought you some of the most powerful muscle-building products ever seen in the bodybuilding world. Now, after years of research and development, we are proud to introduce our first launch into the world of thermogenic fat loss with Adipoxil. Adipoxil isn't your run-of-the-mill fat burner. Adipoxil is new and rewriting the definition of fat loss. Adipoxil's competition strength formula is so powerful, in one cycle, you can go from soft to shredded. When being lean isn't enough, get shredded with Adipoxil. For more information, visit iForceNutrition.com.
With over 300 locations and 2 million members worldwide, Powerhouse Gym has been helping people achieve their goals since 1975. Whether you're visiting the gym for the first time or you're a seasoned professional, you'll see why Powerhouse Gym is the strongest name in fitness. Visit PowerhouseGym.com to get a free guest pass to a location closest to you or to inquire about opening your own Powerhouse Gym location. At Powerhouse Gym, you're not just a number, you're family.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you've ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like some banned substances, but rest assured, there's nothing illegal in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB living legend Flex Wheeler. And now you too can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Hey, this is Seth Ferosi, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Everyone knows that beef is king when it comes to building quality muscle mass. Now you can have all the anabolic power of beef with Carnivore. Beef protein isolate from muscle mass, packed with 20 times the creatine of steak and loaded with extra BCAAs. Carnivore is more concentrated than whey. Beef up with Carnivore, the most sought-after muscle-building protein ever created. For more information, visit MuscleMedsRx.com.
But one of the guys that gets a lot of credit is Steve Blackman from Muscular Development. I mean, those guys have done an extraordinary job for years and years and years to promote health, to promote fitness, to promote strength, to promote bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, and all of those kind of things. So the contributions they made is gigantic, and I hail them for that.
Yeah.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. If you want to get in on the action, call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
I'm the truth and these other... All right, we are on with the 1983 NPC National Overall Champion. I have to emphasize that because this is one of the contests where all you have to do is win your class to get the IFBB Pro card, but there's very few overall winners. Bob Paris among them, along with, followed by Mike Christian, Gary Stridham in 1986. I won in 87. Vince Taylor, 88. Troy Zuccolato, my former training partner, in 89. At Al Q Gurley in 1990. It seems like I can remember, Bob, those names just come right off the tip of my tongue as I was in the throes of my career. And,
right.
And more recently, I would be hard-pressed to tell you who won it 5 years ago, and I know I was there working for Muscular Development. There's a lot of forgettable physiques out there by comparison, because I just, the depth of field, like you alluded to earlier, was so deep and the players were so strong that any number of guys going into that contest from different categories, from the light heavy to the middleweights, could have won the overall, so it meant something. It seemed like it meant more back in those days to actually win the overall. And also you, at your time, had to go on to the world championships, which a lot of the Americans stopped doing by the time I came along in 1987. But winning that title, I'm sure at some point in time, either before or immediately after that, you had, like many of us, the privilege of going in and meeting with Joe Weider. I just seen you on so many of the covers of the magazines. Tell me what that experience was like.
I first met Joe in 1982. It was actually leading up to the 1980. It was after I'd won the Mr. LA. In 81, another year or so went by, and then in 1982, John Balick took, John was still a photographer in those days, quite a wonderful photographer actually, and, he took some photos of me after we were introduced, and he passed those along, and, to Joe, and then the next thing I knew, we were sitting down, to lunch out in Woodland Hills, and, it kind of began a very sort of like strong, but very sort of at times volatile relationship. I think a lot of people have had, you know, have had these wonderful, strong, good, bad, mixed relationships, with him throughout that, time in history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joe and I, we considered each other friends, but we were also, you know, a couple of headstrong guys who had a very distinct way of seeing the world that didn't always sort of come together, in a perfect way. But, he was a tremendous help to my early career. And as I've written many times, I remain grateful for that. What he contributed to the world we participated in was, you know, that can't be remade, essentially. You've got a lot of imitators, but no one's ever going to... He's one of a kind, that's for sure.
Yeah, and with that being said, Bob, it wasn't like in those days you were bodybuilding, hoping to strike it rich through bodybuilding. I mean, here you are, you had your movie star good looks, you're on the cover of everything, you're endorsing the products and all that good stuff. But at some point, you did kind of get paid to do what it is that your passion was, but you're like a Renaissance man. You had many different passions. You were much more than a bodybuilder. You can clearly see that from your articles, from the style of dress that you had. You didn't carry yourself as like a sweaty, grunty bodybuilder, which I think part of the attraction for a large population of the people were drawn to you because you were just the antithesis of a stereotypical meathead.
Right. It seemed to offend some people, but there was also the support and the understanding of that, of the way that that I sort of just lived authentically. That was just who I was. I think that translated to a lot of people, and I was really grateful for strong feedback that I had from that. But I have often, you know, thought, well, it would have been much simpler if I'd just been sort of uni-focused and not had all of these other interests, because I've said this before,
when, especially when people ask me if I miss the bodybuilding lifestyle, I always have to just say, well, look, I wasn't really ever a lifestyle bodybuilder. Mm-hmm. I went into the gym, I did my thing, I did it with great intensity, and then I dropped it, and I left it behind, and I went out to have all of these other interests out in the world. And that's what I always tried to talk about when I used to tour doing bodybuilding and fitness seminars and lectures, was get a really full life, because, you know, if you're only just sort of snuggling up to a 45-pound plate every night, that's not going to make for a very interesting, inner monologue or personal resume, you know. Mm-hmm. Find stuff you like to do, because, you know, the weights aren't everything. They're important, especially if you're striving to be an elite-level athlete. But I don't know. I guess I was never just interested in one thing, and I always have considered that to be a strength.
You certainly, without, you know, laying down, I think, some type of a blueprint, influenced people like myself that just observed you and Labrada. I watched kind of how you guys dressed at these events and kind of how you carried yourselves in your interviews and articles. And the word class is written all over both of you guys as far as influences to my career. But that being said, you certainly came off to me as like a Barry Sanders, man. I mean, like, you were right there on the cusp and walked away what I thought was, it started to change. It started to move into this mass monster thing, and you're a 6 foot, 240-plus pound bodybuilder. I thought you were going to be the guy that ultimately, with more size, would be able to carry that off in light of Lee Haney ultimately moving out in 91, clearly not seeing Dorian Yates coming up. But at some point you said, look, this is not going to be my gig. And the taste that you had in your mouth winning the national championships seemed to change somewhere around 1989, 90-ish. What
it
was
did,
that
actually,
all about?
I really probably, in retrospect, stayed in the competitive side of the pro circuit for at least a couple of years too long.
Right.
And regrets can be a positive thing too, because anyone who tells you they don't have any regrets probably doesn't have a very deeply introspective life.
Yeah.
Because if you can't look at your life and see where, if I only had made this turn, I'm not saying you must ruminate and brood, but if you can't look at your life and say, okay, well, I could have done this a little better, I could have been a little less, I could have procrastinated that a little less, and so forth and so on. And I can honestly look back and say that, you know, I kind of, after I had retired in 85, I kind of made a comeback for some of the wrong reasons. And I think I was just, and some of it was probably fear of the unknown and a return to the familiar, which was fine. I had a lot of fun that first year or so back. But then, you know, my heart just wasn't in it as much anymore. I was seeing changes happen that I wasn't really comfortable with. And
you saw the 1990 drug test coming along clearly. I mean, that was a year. I mean, I'm the first to admit I failed the first ever bodybuilding drug test at the 1990 Arnold Classic Championships.
Right.
After winning that contest, it cost me $60,000. But
yeah.
It seemed it was moving in the right direction, because the 1990 Olympia was coming, and it was also drug tested.
Right.
And I thought I heard you mention that that's kind of what you were hoping for.
I did. In fact, I first wrote to Ben Weider in, I think, 1985, a lengthy letter about how what I felt should be the direction that the sport took. And it was along the lines of, you know, in motor racing or in horse racing, you have controls, and you have, you know, people are functioning within a controlled environment. And I really strongly encouraged a move toward a tested environment, anticipating the day when the public would just, you just couldn't lie to them anymore. You know, you just couldn't pretend that it was just, you know, you drank 10 glasses of milk a day and that's why you had, you know, 25-inch arms. And so I was really anticipating that, the drug-tested era. And I just think that they lost heart and should have stuck with it and pulled the plug. And the part that I didn't like was pulling the plug and then expecting us all to pretend nothing had happened. And that's kind of what happened. And for me, along with the changes in the laws and all of that, that just became a very sort of like toxic mix for me. And that was the point where I sort of backed away.
Well, going back to 83, because that's what we're really talking about now, this is a time where, you know, it was at the height of its popularity. I mean, it's the American National Championships, and there was something to be said for winning that and the guys that you had to compete against to get that title. Yeah, the landscape's changed. We got 900 more competitors competing this coming weekend, but still, that there's a bodybuilder that's going to walk off with that title.
Right.
It was a different time, going back 30 years, but what can he look forward to on the inside in terms of the accomplished athlete and going forward once that title is in his hand?
Well, I think that, you know, essentially it's up to the person to be entrepreneurial with their life and their career, and to understand that they function at two different levels. The first level is the personal. And that's very important to maintain both feet on the ground and have a good head about you, but also to understand that you are now a commodity of your own volition or under others' volition. You can be the owner of your gig, or you can be a pawn in somebody else's game, and so, or it can be a hybrid of all of those. And it's understanding how to take the short and the long view. And understanding your strengths and weaknesses. I think the people who are most successful in their careers have a fairly strong understanding, even if they're not comfortable with that understanding, of what their strengths and especially what their weaknesses are.
Well, arguably, Bob, you had a very good grasp of self in the climate in which you chose to walk away, the timing of it all, and then just stay away. I mean, I don't remember the last time I saw you at a bodybuilding show, and I got to tell you, I'm one of the most ardent fans of bodybuilding. I've not missed the Mr. Olympia since we stood on stage in 1988. I've not missed the Arnold Classic since it started 26 years ago, and I've been to literally every one of these national championships, and I can tell you, when you left, I don't think I've seen you again.
Well, because I didn't live in L.A., or I lived in L.A. on and off, and I was off. You know, I'd written all these books, but a lot of them, the nonfiction and fitness books. And I really wanted to make a dramatic change in my life and pursue these things that I had really set aside when I was so hyper-focused. And even in that sense of having lots of different interests, there's also a hyper-focus that takes place. And I've really been able to benefit from that time away and, concentrate on aspects of my life that just didn't have anything to do with bodybuilding. And it's a tricky balancing act because bodybuilding is one of those very strong things, and I'm very proud of that. But I've watched it happen time and again. The moment I put it to the forefront, all of this other stuff in the other worlds recede.
Bodybuilding has got to be arguably the most selfish thing a person can do. I imagine boxing to a degree, but football, you have seasons, and, you know, other sports, baseball, basketball, you have seasons, but bodybuilding is all-consuming, and it affects every other relationship you have out there.
And how you're seen in the world. Yeah.
But, I mean, it also prepares you for the world, too, because, like you said,
correct,
by the time you're 23, 24, you've seen the world a couple of times, and you can that translate over into other business dealings mentally and physically.
Right.
But relationships certainly do get hurt, and people fall by the wayside. So to cultivate that after, I'm 12 years in retirement, there's something to be said for being able to really appreciate life, because it feels like you're out of this prison that you were, you know, self-imposed on yourself, eating and training and sleeping, correct?
Right. Yeah, and I began to feel, especially because the business hadn't really diversified by the time I was leaving, I really began to feel a bit like a pawn in someone else's game.
Right.
And as if I didn't really have control of my own volition and my own destiny. It was almost like you're tagged with a nickname and you're expected to stay within those very narrow parameters and not explore outside of them, because it takes away from the focus on, to me, the brand was always too narrow to confine the expansiveness of my interests in life. And so I had to break away in order to sort of explore those other avenues, I think.
Well, with that being said, I mean, your book, The Gorilla Suit, man, I mean, the timing of that book and the detail of that book is arguably ahead of its time. It probably applies to various people in different ways, but it seemed very cathartic writing for you in a way that you express yourself. Do you find that your passion is more geared towards writing, or were you more an artist with the physique? It all seems to be intertwined.
Well, I think at the bottom of all of this, if I had never discovered bodybuilding, I would have been a writer. And I am grateful for my time in bodybuilding and the dedication and the path and the opportunities and all the great stuff that came to my life from that. But underneath it all, and any family member or friend of mine from my growing up would tell you that I was a writer. That was my personality. That was what I was interested in. I was a voracious reader. And that's the career path that I've pursued since. And with Gorilla Suit, I wanted to, it was several years after I'd retired, and I was, the context of the memoir was contemplating a comeback and then ultimately deciding that it wasn't going to happen while exploring growing up and going through all of the bodybuilding world. And I wanted to approach it as a novel, as this character, Bob Paris, going through this journey. And I don't know, it just it seemed to just trigger in me something beyond just writing exercise books or, you know, personal essays, that that showed a path, and that was as a storyteller and a creative. And yes, my approach toward bodybuilding was creative, but this is the path forward for my life now.
You're getting older, Bob, and a lot of people that help shape our relationships have passed away. I mean, Robert Kennedy's gone,
right.
Ben Weider's gone, Joe Weider's gone. I mean, these are people that were in and around the industry, and I'm still heavy in the game. Is there anyone in the game that you even communicate with or have friendships with or talk to? Or, I mean, is bodybuilding something that even comes up at the breakfast or dinner table at all?
I have to tell you that in the context of my life and for the past probably probably 17 or 18 years, like most of my friends, they don't even know that guy. I mean, they'll see, an old picture. And of course, with the internet now, it's impossible. The past never vanishes. And not that I would even want it to, but, I stay in some touch with, friends from those times, Frank Zane, Barry and I are in touch. Everyone's gone to their far flung corners of the world. And, I'm not one to dwell, I guess.
Well, what are you most proud of as bodybuilder? You look back, you Google your name, and you have family and friends, they find out who you were. What are you most proud of as an athlete?
I think for following my own path, for not allowing myself to be persuaded to become something that I wasn't, the pressure to conform to the changing styles, and from the folks, especially as it was being dictated from the folks who had taken over the IFBB Pro division and the judging after Oscar State retired and died, and began to sort of relentlessly push it toward what it's, the path of this last 20 years. I'm proudest of standing up to that and not fully buying into it. There were some moments where I sort of tried to follow and chase the game, and then kind of pulled back from that. And that's in that 2 years when I really should have already moved on. I think I'm proudest of just seeing ideals and being genuine and just expressing those ideals and not selling out, I guess.
Well, speaking of selling out, man, there was a time in the 80s where you came out on the Oprah Winfrey Show. I think you probably came out before the Oprah Winfrey Show, but it was like, that's the major television. Right. And to do that at that time takes a little bit more than guts.
It's one of the things that I'm
I'm just saying, well, it's fashionable, but you did it nonetheless. I think, did your bodybuilding give you that much courage to prepare you for that type of a stage, I should say? I mean, Oprah?
I think what prepared me more than anything was actually the journey to pursue bodybuilding, going from where I lived and grew up, knowing no one and moving to California. I know you grew up in Southern California, but to move there and know no one.
Right.
And to pursue that, that taught me. I remember times sleeping in my car in some alley, getting ready to bunk down for the night, not really knowing where my next meal was going to come from, especially in those early days. And I understood that I was going to die someday. I mean, I remember distinctly having that thought. And I think that just understanding that, and at the time I had read a lot of Castaneda and a lot of talk about weighing everything against your death, how will you remember this event well on your deathbed. And I just thought, in 1989, I wasn't living a closeted life at all. It wasn't a matter of me coming out. I just hadn't done it in the media. And so crossing that line, it was not fashionable. It was, it was a pretty right-wing time in America back then. And, it had some pretty major impact on
my life.
So
what's a day now like then? I mean, clearly we get a visual of what it's like to live as a bodybuilder. There's a lot of bodybuilders living out of their car and one meal to the next and one foot out the door on eviction and another one trying to get their protein powders. I mean, you wake up and what do you do with your time?
What do I do with my time? I live in a really glorious part of British Columbia, with my partner of 17 years, and we have this really cool life out in the woods in a place in the city, and have a great dog, and I do a lot of outdoor stuff, and then I spend all day long at my desk writing.
Nice. So, your income is from the writings that you do? Is that
I script write, I produce, I ghost write. I've been making a transition to fiction for the past few years. So yeah, that's the major emphasis of my life.
Well, I'd love to catch you for an exclusive article from Muscular Development that we can put in print. Just bring people up to speed with you. Not everybody listens to MD Radio, but they certainly buy Muscular Development magazine. So if you will, maybe we can continue this in a more detailed fashion on a Q&A article through Muscular Development. If you can give me that opportunity, I'd love to do that interview.
Well, it's always great to talk with you, Sean. Definitely.
All right. Bob Clark Paris will be 54 years old. What, December the 14th?
December the 14th. I'll be,
did I say 54?
Yeah. Whoa, it's like... Yeah, life flies by. I'm telling you, carpe diem.
Well, let me tell you, Bob, you are continuing to motivate and inspire, and those pictures will last forever.
Appreciate that. People talk about
what a bodybuilder should look like. I don't break out my pictures, dude. You're the man.
You got to give yourself some props there.
My props came when I saw you in 1988 on stage with me. Not to mention, you were also there in New York City at my pro debut. So you influenced me a lot of ways. You were, you're 6 foot, you're Wyatt, you're 240. I mean, you're everything I'm not, but you did leave some pretty big footprints for me to follow behind, and I appreciate that from
right on,
me to you.
And you did that very, very well, sir.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Bob.
All right, Sean.
All right. That's your 1983 national champion, Bob Paris, living the good life up in British Columbia, who impacted many. And we're going to head into another guy who also lived the dream. Last year's champion, Brian Yerski, walked off with that title and has yet to step on a pro stage. Let's bring him on to MD Radio. Brian, are you there?
How's it going?
Hey, man, I'm sorry. That went a little bit long, but I was talking to one of my heroes.
Oh, no, that was a pretty damn good segment there.
And I got to tell you, this guy is probably more humble than anybody I've actually talked to. I don't think his heartbeat went above like 50 as he eloquently, displayed his entire life in front of us right there. But here you are, some 30 years later, you win the national championship. And I know you had a baby.
Yeah.
And that baby's got to be how old now?
Pushing two in January.
Good Lord. And so I know life kind of gets in the way of jumping up there and into the fray, but rumor has it, 2014, you're going to be in the mix.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we just took a good year. You know, that's what's coming with the national show in a week. You know, I put a good hard year in and made some drastic changes as far as the physique. And, yeah, we're looking at coming out blazing for 2014.
Now, which is the do you pick the show yet, or you just?
It's midsummer. We're debating, New York Pro through Chicago Wings of Strength, somewhere in that four show range, between April and July. So
I'm going to ask you, like I asked Bob, because it was a different time then. What happens after you win the national championship? I went back to college. I came home on a Sunday. And I was back in school on Monday, and nobody even gave a crap. Nobody even cared. They didn't even know what the hell was going on because, back then we didn't have the Internet. We didn't have Facebook
and
Twitter. It was 3 months later. It was actually in January after Christmas break people started noticing me. But with regards to yourself, you had been plodding away at that national championship for a while, and you finally got it, and then you chose to sit on the sidelines. What was that experience like the past year?
It was good as far as self-promotion and metrics appearances. We got back from Atlanta last year, and then I did some appearances to finish up the year, and then started the year off at the Fit Expo, and then full steam ahead both, for personal appearances and metrics appearances, and 20-some-odd appearances later, here we sit getting ready to do the last two at Nationals, and then John Lindsay's show out there in L.A. in December, and then pretty much that's it for the year. So, it was a productive year as far as promotions and as far as in the gym. So,
yeah, well, the title certainly doesn't hurt in terms of promotions, as it were, but it does come with some pressures. Most guys win that title, and they jump in right after they win it. You sat out a full year, so you're going to be one of those guys, a dark horse, someone that's not on everybody's lips, but everyone's waiting for you to step in to the fray. Are you mentally, psychologically, physically prepared?
Oh, I'm chomping at the bit. I mean, it was, like I said, right out of the gate, we had thought about getting into the Dallas, Europa, and then the week before would have been Tampa. But as those, that month after Nationals wore off, reality kind of set in, and it was like, there was work needed to be done to be a competitive pro. And I didn't really want to jump into that first pro show and then take two steps back and have to then, take time off after the fact of making the pro debut. I'd rather win Nationals, sit out that year, try to improve on what we need to do, and then come out, be competitive in that first show, and then hopefully, be a competitive pro from there on out.
Well, that's awesome, man. We're going to see you at the Fort Lauderdale NPC National Championships. I should say the NPC National Championships in Fort Lauderdale this Friday and Saturday. It's probably going to be a little surreal. You're going to be sitting there in the audience watching this show and also, working and promoting yourself out there in the audience. What can this guy expect, winning that title and having the closure? I remember when you won it, I interviewed you, you had the trophy. I mean, what's in store for this guy that's going to win this show?
Well, relating to that last segment, it's pretty much up to the competitor. Either you're going to bust, hump, and hustle and try to make the most out of it, or you're just going to let it lay to the wayside. So it's solely up to that person, whether they want to get full steam ahead or just wait there and see what opportunities come to them. So.
Did winning that validate it in terms of your family and your friends, your inner circle, the people that had just been waiting for this moment? I mean, did it?
That's a tough one there. I mean, I don't even know if it validated it for me. That's a tough one. I mean, everyone, the whole family is supportive. Like I said, my parents hadn't missed the show until, unfortunately, that show. They traveled East Coast, West Coast, and then my parents, they had their flights booked, ready to board, and my dad was having health issues last year, so he's the one chomping at the bit. When are you making this pro debut so I can, get caught up? But,
Well, at the end of the day, that trophy's there. You've joined a very elite fraternity, along with Kevin Lavroni, and of course we know Ed Nunn and Evan Sintapani and Cedric McMillan, and someone's going to actually join that fraternity. I'm sure you're going to be on hand, so we're going to catch up with you and get more of your thoughts and opinions on this weekend's outcome as we storm into Fort Lauderdale with upwards of 1,000 competitors slated to compete. But I want to thank you for taking time out and calling us.
Not a problem.
All right, Brian, we'll see. Hey, come back here and let us know what show specifically you choose for 2014. All right, that's Brian Yerski, your 2012 overall NPC National Super Heavyweight Champion. Looking forward to catching up with him this weekend. We're going to change gears. There was a bit of business over the weekend in Tijuana, Mexico, where we saw a pro bodybuilding championship and another title go to four-time Arnold Classic winner, 2008 Mr. Olympia champion, Australian champion, English champion. I mean, is there a title this guy hasn't won? Let's bring on Kit from MD Latino, who was on location out there in Tijuana. Kit, welcome to MD Radio.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm good, man. Hey, real quick, you are calling me from Miami, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me just, for clarification, were you there in Tijuana?
We are actually transmitting live on MDLatino.com.
That's right. So yeah,
we had a live broadcast.
Yeah, you guys were doing the live broadcast, but Dexter the Blade Jackson, at 44 years old, adds another $12,000 to his pocketbook and another championship to his belt, but he did say, you know what, he needed to go places where people hadn't personally seen him. So going to Mexico was a big thing for Dexter Jackson. But take me through a little bit of what happened this weekend, because I missed it. I had my first weekend off, so I wasn't tuned into the bodybuilding thing. What went down
in
Tijuana?
Well, you got to get some time off, Sean. I mean, you're a workaholic.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, definitely. You know, MD Latino was on site there, and it was real gratifying to see how much the sport is growing overseas now, especially in Latin America. We did have a Team MD Latino on site broadcasting on our website. You know, Dexter looked great. This is actually the second time Dexter's been in Mexico in the last 2 months.
Right.
You know, what I was really surprised is not to see as many, you know, competitors come down that may have not made a Mr. Olympia appearance. I think this is definitely an opportunity for IFBB pros to really get their feet wet. And it's like you were saying before with the interview with Mr. Paris there, that there is no off season, especially if you did not qualify for a Mr. Olympia.
Right. Well, we were talking earlier about the guys that are, you know, the Olympia's gone, or they're tired, or they don't want to travel. I mean, this is an opportunity, creating these shows that these guys are just missing.
And they're missing out on some cash. Those are some good cash rewards.
Yeah, and the promoters go all out to make sure that these guys have something and an opportunity. And when you don't show up, these are the shows that wind up disappearing. So,
and you know something? You were asking me about how was the show set up, what were the dynamics. There was a full house. I mean, here in the United States, sometimes the show, some people complain about attendance, but in Tijuana, there was a full attendance there at that show. So this is a real chance if you're representing a sports nutrition company or touring or trying to get your name out there. Certainly, this is a great way to market yourself as a businessman / bodybuilder.
Right. And that being said, you got your finger on the pulse of the Latin America and Mexico down there in terms of, you know, the rise of popularity in bodybuilding, fitness, figure, bikini, all of that good stuff. How are things going out there in terms of the reception of what you're doing with MD Latino? I know that you were headed down to Argentina, and I saw you out in Brazil. What's the feedback coming from the Latin places?
Well, definitely, markets like Mexico are definitely leading the way. I was a little disappointed on the amateur side. Certainly the bikini side, there was a lot of talent out of Mexico. I think we saw that Lorena Bucio and Christy Mendivel, Cassandra de la Rosa, Cindy Villalobos. I mean, it was just an uncanny amount in the bikini. But the men's bodybuilding, that has been the worst selection I have ever seen out of Mexico at a men's bodybuilding show. And the amateur division. There are certainly names out there like Josue Plasencia, Raul Sanchez, Fernando Fernandez, top-notch athletes that have actually won shows. Juan Alonso Medina, they have actually won shows in the NPC in the United States, who did not compete in that show. And this was a pro card qualifier for bodybuilders.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that these guys are not following up. Now, is that a reflection of the influence of the physique in terms of what may be more realistically attainable for the Mexican contingency out there and, not showing up
in
bodybuilding?
Not at all. I would say in certain markets, yes, but Mexico bodybuilding is still very alive. I'm looking at a laundry list of competitors right now that just really sat this one out. I'm not really sure the person motive why they would sit this show out, but I tell you this much, Sean, they will be competing at the Arnold Classic Ohio and the Arnold Classic Brazil. I'll tell you that right now. And you're going to see a lot of monsters come out of Mexico, especially a guy by the name of Elias Gutierrez, who is weighing 300 pounds right now out of Cozumel, Mexico.
we're going to keep our eyes focused on these guys coming up. And what you're doing out there is second to none, man. So keep up the good work, Kit. We'll see you out here in Fort Lauderdale this Friday and Saturday at the show.
Definitely. Any top information you're looking into Latin bodybuilding, it's ndlatino.com. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Sean.
All right, brother. We'll catch up with you. Thanks for doing that hard work, man. That's Kit doing the business out there for MD Latino, our Latina contingency. And our Latino men out there, they are checking out MD Latino. Awesome job. And we're headed to Fort Lauderdale this weekend for the 32nd annual NPC National Championships, where, of course, all the information can be found at MuscularDevelopment.com. We'll have our A-team on the ground for play-by-play, paparazzi, video, the whole nine yards. I know Kevin Lebrone is going to be in the house. He won it back in 1991. He's going to add some expert commentary as well. Get some perspective. All the events are going down Friday starting at 1 p.m. They'll have the men's bodybuilding, women's physique, and bikini prejudging. On Saturday at 9 a.m., they'll have the women's bodybuilding, men's physique, and figure. And, of course, all finals will be taking place at 5 p.m. starting on Saturday. And for more ticket information, make sure you visit nationalbodybuilding.com or the Broward County, Broward Center for Performing Arts. That's where the actual contest is being held at www.browardcenter.org. So make sure you check that out, man. I got to tell you, I'm still kind of in awe that over the weekend we saw GSP retain his title in this UFC fight. I had Hendricks, Johnny Hendricks, won that contest, and Dana White was none too upset that GSP won, retained his belt. It sounded like a retirement speech, but very interesting in the UFC. More importantly, getting back to Bob Parris, again, I never had the opportunity to verbally tell Bob what an influence he was on my career, but he carried himself with class and dignity and respect. He was never one of those guys that people badmouth, and he never badmouthed anybody. He's a true gentleman and a pioneer of the sport, because there's many bodybuilders that were influenced by his work. And he's always going to be known as an artist in the industry of bodybuilding as it relates to the physique. And as you can tell, he's kind of a renaissance man, you know, hiking, biking, acting, motivational speaking and writing, certainly living a very full and rich life. Bob, one of the true gentlemen in the sport of bodybuilding, I have him up there on my list of influence, along with Chris Dickerson and, of course, Lee Labrada, two other very heavily influential guys in my bodybuilding career. But with that being said, someone's going to join the fraternity of national overall champion this weekend, and they'll be able to say that they are in the record books with someone like a Lee Haney and a Bob Parris, and of course Mike Christian and the whole crew. For more information, visit us right here at MuscularDevelopment.com and come back a week from now to MD Radio to find out the contest results of the winners. And if you want to know more about the Tijuana competition, we have play-by-play on the MuscularDevelopment.com No Bull form. Check that out. So with that, and without further ado, we are heading into Monday Night Football. That's right. It's coming up. I want to say thanks to all of our guests. Bob Parris, of course, Brian Yersky, our reigning national champion, and Kit from MD Latino. I'm Sugar Sean Ray. Peace.
You've been listening to MD Radio, a look at the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. Join Sean Ray again next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.